I'm Sina.
I'm Danielle.
We want to focus on television and movies in particular.
Yes. Disclaimer that we are in no way film experts. A deep, like, dive. Be quiet!
Whoa.
I'm yelling.
Back me up on this one.
Hey, you're listening to
Two Girls Watch TV.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Two Girls Watch TV. I'm Danielle.
And I'm Sina. All right, so we got to do it.
We got to do it? We got to do what?
We got to go into the graph. Why do I always do this?
It's the G.
It's the one fucking show that we don't cover.
I actually like to watch the Grammys, personally.
I was thinking that maybe we should, because there are some, like, scores and original songs. Or is that the Globes? I don't know. There's some movie scores that get nominated in the Grams. So maybe we should.
Maybe.
Mess around with the Grams.
I like watching the Grammys. And one of my favorite Grammy shows was the COVID Grammy show, because it was just all of the musicians performing for each other. And I really appreciated that.
That's so heartwarming.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what I don't like about these award shows.
What?
How they ruin comedians' careers.
Yeah.
We talked about this a little bit prior to, we were texting this week, and it's so unfortunate how they're like, let's get a funny guy or a funny gal or a funny person. And then it's like wrong jokes, wrong crowd, doesn't always hit. And then it just, like, it just fucking tanks them. And I don't think it's fair. I don't think it lines up. And I think the one time where it was, like, low-key weird, where they had, like, they just kept passing the baton of different actors and actresses introducing people and doing little bits, just go back to that. Because they all liked it, and they're the audience for it, because they're literally sitting in the audience. And I don't think anybody really complained about that one. So let's just do that.
Yeah, I think that it's cringy to see someone bomb that badly, and you could tell that he was bombing, and he could tell that he was bombing, and that's why he, like, threw the writers under the bus about how bad the jokes were.
A few times.
Yeah, which I know a lot of people kind of had some backlash to that, because there was a big writer strike that just happened. I think it was a combination of things. I would like to think that they probably scrambled to find someone, number one.
He said it. He said, I got the gig 10 days ago.
Yeah, yeah. But also, his jokes were, they sucked. You haven't watched Barbie yet, right?
No.
Okay.
I didn't like that one.
That joke was horrendous. Out of all the jokes that you can make, that one sucked.
Yeah, I feel like they could have, like, did, like, a bit about, like, independent women instead of just saying, like, it's boobies and plastic.
Yeah, you should never, never, ever say the word boobies in your... Unless you are calling some...
I hate that we're saying it now. I'm cringing as we're saying it.
Unless you are calling someone a boob a la Drake and Josh.
Yes, I was just going to say that.
You should not be saying boob.
Great. You heard it here first.
That was when they lost it. That was the moment where it was like, all right, we're done with this. Because you know what? I was trying to give him a chance. I didn't know what this guy was. Who this guy, you know what? I sort of knew who this guy was.
He has some specialties. Funny.
Yeah, I had never seen a stand-up before. I knew what his face used to look like, but...
used to?
Yeah, it looks very different now than it...
Ooh!
If he wants to tell a joke about boobies, I can tell a really mean joke about his bad Botox that he has on his face and fillers.
Well, I guess we're all a little plastic, Barbie or not.
There we go. Kick a man when he's down.
I'm here to revive it. Golden Globes, don't hire me, because I never want to fucking be a part of that mess.
Yeah. The Meryl Streep jokes were funny. Like it started off strong, and then it just It was too many cheap shots.
Okay, so I'm just gonna say this, and he's never gonna listen to this podcast. But if he does, he should heed my word.
Okay,
Ricky Gervais needs to host the Golden Globes again, because he's the only one who can get away with all these cheap shots.
But also, like, it's Ricky Gervais. Like,
he's a comedy god, as far as I'm concerned. Yeah. I love him. I think he's fantastic.
That's why he won the stand-up comedian. Honestly, what was annoying me is, like, Jim Gaffigan should have hosted. Because when Jim Gaffigan came out to present the best stand-up special, he had everyone rolling on the floor. Like,
and if Jim Gaffigan's smart, he turned it down because he's seen what's happened to other comedians. Like, I would never, I'm a nothing, spit on me, nobody, when it comes to, like, jokes and stuff, because, like, I just do it, like, very casually. But, like, the way it's going, if this was, like, an opportunity, I guess you're making buco bucks, because, like, I would never, the way people, what happens to people before they walk into that room and walk out of that room, I never hear good things when a comedian is in that kind of setting, like Chris Rock, Sebastian Maniscalco, Joe, what the hell's his last name, Coy. There's three examples right there.
Okay, so you are the casting director for the Golden Globes.
Oh, perfect. Okay, yeah.
Okay.
Christopher Walken's hosting the whole thing.
Honestly, I could see Christopher Walken hosting it. So, yeah, who are you reaching out to? Whose agent are you contacting?
I'm getting a time machine.
Okay.
I'm bringing Betty White back to life.
No, you can't do that. We're in 2024. You got to pick people from that are alive and able to do it.
Because honestly, the people that I love, I wouldn't want to tank their careers. Because I love Heather McMahon, but I would never want to put her in that situation.
Okay, you can't think of hosting as the kiss of death. There is always going to be someone who has a problem with something. You gotta, because people probably watch Heather McMahon's stand-up special and was like, this girl is crap. That's anyone watching comedy. Comedy is subjective.
Yeah, that's what I was just going to say. Yeah. Okay,
there is no such thing as fun for the whole family. But who are you reaching out to? Who is on your list of people to host the Golden Globes?
Well, first I want to say that there's fun for the whole family, but there's not funny for the whole family.
True.
That's the thing. I would put Heather on that list.
Okay.
I would put our pal John Mulaney. But I don't
think John Mulaney's comedy would, maybe it could. I don't think it's right for that. You don't have to choose a comedian either.
I know. I'm going to slowly work my way out of that. But the only reason that I think so is because he has kind of like adapted his comedy to work well with his stand-up, with SNL stuff, with doing little bits on talk shows. Mm-hmm. So I feel like he's able to, like, manipulate his comedy in that type of way for the better.
Yeah.
Ricky Gervais, Tina Fey and Amy Poehler did a great job.
Yeah.
Would love to revive that fantastic duo.
Dipping into SNL, what about a Kate McKinnon? What about Bowen Yang? I would love to see Bowen Yang host.
Okay.
Actually, I would put Bowen Yang top of the list.
Leslie Jones.
She could host. Yeah. Other people. I liked I'm thinking of, like, the funny people that I saw on the show. So Jim Gaffigan came to my mind. I would absolutely like to see Jim Gaffigan. Because you know what? I feel like Jim Gaffigan would make jokes about the people in the room, but he would do it in a very sarcastic way, and it would be funny.
He's also a clean comic for the most part.
Yeah, exactly.
Unless he's done something new that I haven't seen, but...
No, he's very...
I remember he did a whole special about food, and I was just, like, on the floor.
Hot Pockets.
Remember when we all thought pitas were healthy?
Yeah, no, I think that he would be an absolutely hysterical host. Kristen Wiig. Will Ferrell.
I love Kristen Wiig.
Maya Rudolph.
Oh, Kristen Wiig and Maya Rudolph. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to scream. Did you see the SNL?
Yes, with ABBA. That's why I was thinking Kate McKinnon and Bone Yang, because all of them in that skit were hysterical, but also I could see all of them working really well. You know why I'm going to go back?
Bill fucking Hader.
I'm going to...
And Fred Armisen. The two of them together? Oh.
I'm going to go back to Bone Yang.
Okay.
And here's my stance on Bone Yang. I am an avid SNL watcher. I watch SNL every week when it is out. Bone Yang is a hysterical comedic actor, but he is also very, very funny writer. So I could see him. It's not so much that, like, you have to be in this role, to accept the role of hosting the Golden Globes. You not only have to deliver the jokes on stage very, very well, you need to be adaptable to work with the writers in the writing room. We don't know what kind of writers are in the writing room. So I feel like Bowen Yang could bridge that gap because he's used to doing it on SNL.
I agree. I'd also like to say, and this is a hot take, but from somebody who has experienced both sides of this coin, I think this is better for somebody who has improv and writing experience more so than just stand-up comedy experience. Mm-hmm. Because I think there's a decent amount of it that maybe we need to think on our feet a little bit, especially if we're bombing.
Yeah.
But we need to be good at crowd work, which mm-hmm. is a little bit of, like, it's definitely stand-up comedy, but in order to be able to do that, you have to improvise.
Yeah.
And I think more of this can come to life if we're thinking about it through skits instead mm-hmm. of just through jokes. Because this is like one of the classic rules of improv. Action moves the story forward. That can easily happen in writing. It doesn't always happen in jokes, especially if your jokes are only based on, like, set up punchline, and there's no, like, sort of like story to be told through it.
Yeah.
Where I think that, yes, those jokes take a little bit longer, so it's definitely like a bigger issue with the time constraint. Mm-hmm. But I know that even if they're not as funny, they will still be very entertaining and people will be intrigued and want to listen to them. So it will captivate people's attention instead of just a joke where, yes, you can get somebody's attention, but also it's like, oh, if it doesn't work. Mm-hmm. If it doesn't work and it's more of like a skit, it's like, well, I enjoyed the ride on that one.
Yes. And
you need more of that.
I agree with you. And that is why let's say Heather McMahon was the one to host, I think she would do incredible because she is so incredible at crowd work. I've never seen a person work better with a crowd than Heather McMahon.
I think she should come out as a different character every time if she doesn't.
I mean, she absolutely could. But here's the other thing, and I'm taking this I'm speaking this information solely from a comment that John Mulaney said in his stand-up special about how he was writing jokes for a award show.
Oh, is it my spoon fell on the floor?
No. That was, this was his, like, joke about little people.
Okay. Oh, yes. Oh, my God. Yes. Fantastic joke. Okay.
So the thing about, and again, this is where I'm getting my knowledge, so take it with a grain of salt. It leads me to believe from that joke alone that in order to okay an opening monologue of an award show, it needs to be approved by the network that is running the show, aka CBS. So that leads me to believe that there is less room to do crowd work and deviate from the written out opening monologue, which seems to be not necessarily, it seems to be a bad thing on the part of the host because they are not able to think on their feet and do the improv that they would probably prefer to do.
Yes.
Capiche?
Yeah, no, I get it. But like, I feel like.
I haven't said capiche in a while. So.
Sorry. Capiche.
Capoosh.
I also feel like, and I have no idea what these contracts look like, but I feel like there also needs to be some sort of agreement. Like, I'll avoid these words, or I'll avoid these, like, you know, like obvious cursing, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's always tough. You have to have somebody, like, constantly ready to hit that button. But I feel like there needs to be some sort of, no pun intended, give and take when it comes to this stuff, where it's like, you need to let me improvise, because what if I forget a line?
Yeah.
But also, like, I promise I'll avoid, like, these items.
Yeah, absolutely.
Kind of thing. And again, I don't know what that looks like. You know, people who have seen these contracts are probably maybe listening, and they're like, duh, that's of course is what it's like. But I don't know. If it's not, it should be, right? Because...
yeah.
I don't know. It's so easy to forget a line. Like, there have been times where I've told my joke and I'm on stage and I'm just like, huh.
Well, the difference is that they have teleprompters.
Okay. I didn't have one of those.
No. When you're hosting the Golden Globes, you definitely have a teleprompter.
There was.
That's why everyone's like, oh, we have 18 seconds left. Like, it is a produced show. It is a heavily
produced. I just thought it was a countdown.
No, it is a heavily produced show. There is someone there with a teleprompter.
Okay. Because there have been many times where I've forgotten. Once you get past, like, I might bomb on stage and you bomb on stage, it's like, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Once you conquer that, it's like, whatever the fuck. Just work on your jokes and, like, worry about you. I remember there was one time where I forgot a line and I was like, huh. You know, I started this joke and it was really going somewhere. Line? And like that, I completely like forgot what I was supposed to say.
Yeah.
And then I was like, kind of wish I had a teleprompter up here, but I'll figure it out. Because I was trying to do it without my notes. And then I was just like, I'm just going to goop on my notes. And then the audience was like, you open your notes. We want to hear the joke.
Yeah.
So that's what I did.
However, if you did that in front of Robert De Niro and Martin Scorsese, I feel like and Meryl Streep, I would be dead.
You'd be dead if I was like, I forgot my line?
If I was up there and I was Joe Coy and I was making those jokes and everyone was upset with me, I would light myself on fire right then and there.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that was that. Everyone kept saying, that's an intimidating room. That is an intimidating room.
Of course it is.
Yeah. Honestly, you know who probably would have been a great host? Robert Downey Jr. He has great comedic timing.
Oh, that's a good point.
But I don't think that Iron Man, he's not going to do it.
No, probably not.
Yeah.
But it's like, I don't know. Then if that's the case, then have one of the greats up there and do it.
Have one of the what?
Have one of the greats go up there and do it.
The greats?
One of these legends.
Yeah, but like, they don't want to spend the money on it. That's the problem.
Well, it's not just the money. It's like, I don't even know. Well, first of all, they have to be spending a lot of money because they're convincing people to go into this hot, heated room, like, not long before they have to be there. Because didn't they do that with the Academy Awards either last year or the year before? That guy found out, like, a few days before?
Well, it's also just, like, COVID really effed up the Oscars and the Golden Globes. So that's why they have to scramble a lot. And with this, they were coming out of the writer strike and the actor strike. So that's why they had to really scramble.
Right. But they rescheduled these things, didn't they?
I don't think the Golden Globes was rescheduled. Normally the time that the Golden Globes happen.
Okay. All right. But the Emmys.
Emmys got pushed.
Okay. All right. I get it, right? I get what you're saying. But also, hear me out. These are like some of the biggest organizations, right?
Yeah.
And like what they cast and hire actors and comedians, professionals for like a living, right? And then we got to hear like, I got the gig 10 days before. So like part of me doesn't want to blame the comedian or the writers. Part of me wants to blame who decided that hiring somebody 10 days before the gig was a good idea.
Well, it was probably CBS, but also CBS, have you watched a CBS primetime TV show lately?
I haven't watched cable in a minute. So maybe I have no business talking about
that. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's not like they're not the ones who are funding Oppenheimer. They're funding, I don't know, what's a CBS? I should call my dad and see like a CBS TV show that they watch. Ghosts.
Is that funny?
My parents like it.
All right. Maybe.
All right. We have talked too long about this. I think we're getting somewhere, and I think that if CBS needs to hire anyone, they need to hire us to run the logistical back end of things.
Oh my God, that show would be seamless.
We would be running that thing. Like, seamless. Have you seen those memes where it's like, you know, this woman runs her Ross for Less like the Marines? We would run that thing like the Marines, baby. All right.
I agree.
That all being said,
I know this was fun, but it was different, right? Because we usually just sit here and talk about the winners and everything else, and I just kind of went on this route, and we went with it.
You know what? There was a lot to discuss. It was fun. We had some comments, but I'm very excited to talk about the movie that we're about to talk about, because it won, and I'm so happy it did.
It did. I don't know where you watched it, but I will say I watched it like hours before this call. So I watched it today. It was more accessible probably prior to winning a Golden Globe. Now it's $20 everywhere.
Peacock.
Unless you own Peacock.
Peacock?
Well, we say them all different, right? We have Netflix, Hulu, HBO, Peacock.
Peacock. Yes, it is streaming on Peacock. It came on December 29th, and I watched it on January 1st. This was the first movie I watched this new year. I was very happy about it. So as far as Oscar nominations, they are not out yet. They will be coming in 12 days on January 23rd. Well, actually, you're hearing this on Friday, so 11 days.
Right.
Yes. Golden Globes. This film was nominated for Best Motion Picture, Musical, or Comedy. Paul Giamatti won Best Performance by a Male Actor, Musical, or Comedy. And Divine Joy Randolph won for Best Supporting Actress in Any Motion Picture.
What won for Best Musical or Comedy? Was it The Bear?
That's a TV show. Musical or Comedy. Not Barbie.
No. Sorry.
No, it's okay. Let me look this up really quick.
Poor Things.
Poor Things won, yes. In that category, it was Poor Things, Air, American Fiction, Barbie, May, December, The Holdovers.
Poor Things better be really good.
I'd watch it.
Because this was really good.
I told you!
This was really, really, really fucking good.
I texted Christina after I watched it.
Was this the one where you were like, I don't know if you're going to like it?
I don't think so.
There was something you said, there's something that we were going to watch, and you said two things about it. I don't know if you're going to like it. It's an A24 film. Don't watch it with your mother.
No, that's Saltburn.
Okay, got it.
Right. Yeah, that one I don't know if you're going to like. This one I knew you were going to like. Because Nick and I watched this, and I was like, wow, I really like that. And then even the next morning, Nick was like, wow, I really liked that movie.
It was a really good movie.
It was so good. Okay. I can't wait to gush about it. Give me your summary.
Did we even say it?
We're talking about The Holdovers today.
He just went into where to find it. Okay. Some boys get stuck at their boarding school over the holidays for a variety of very unfortunate reasons. Mr. Angus Tully is probably the most unfortunate, as he can't get away on a ski trip when one of the boys' fathers comes to rescue most of them for the holidays. Angus's parents can't be reached. Instead, he's stuck with Mary and Mr. Paul Hunman, a bitter history teacher. But the holidays warm up even the coldest of hearts.
So our main characters, we have hard-ass history teacher, Paul Hunnam, a.k.a. Walleye, which is what the kids call him, played by Paul Giamatti. His best but brattiest student, Angus Tully, is played by Dominic Sessa. Head of the cafeteria, Mary Lamb, is played by Divine Joy Randolph, who
is a vet.
She's a vet. She was in Only Murders in the Building. And
Dolomite.
Dolomite is my name. And then I also brought up Miss Lydia Crane, played by Carrie Preston. So, as Mr. Hunnam and Angus grow closer and change their perspectives on one another, Mr. Hunnam decides to grant a wish of Angus's for Christmas. Angus wants to go to Boston, breaking the headmaster's rule, but entree new. Mary, Paul, and Angus hit the road. They drop off Mary at her sister's, and then Paul and Angus have a fun-filled touristy day in Boston until Boston. Angus tries to leave without Paul. He says it's to see his dad, who Paul and we, the audience, think is dead. Sadly, Angus's father is in a mental institution suffering from schizophrenia. Paul and Angus have a heart-to-heart, and we see our friends back at school watching the ball drop and setting off fireworks in the kitchen. We flash forward to school being back in session, and Paul gets called to the headmaster's office. Angus's mom and stepfather are there and know that Paul and Angus went to visit Angus's father because Angus left him a snow globe, and now Angus's father needs to be moved. Paul takes the blame for the excursion, saying it was he who encouraged Angus to see his father so Angus does not get expelled and sent to military school. Paul is fired.
I forgot about the snow globe, sorry.
It's okay.
Okay, this is where we get... Tully runs to Hunnam and explains he doesn't know exactly what happened or what he said, but all he knows is that he isn't being kicked out and Hunnam got fired. They share a nice moment encouraging each other to continue on with their lives and have a strong handshake. Paul finishes packing his U-Haul and drives away. As he leaves the school grounds, he finally opens the expensive unopened bottle of liquor. He takes a big swig, swishes it around his mouth, and spits it out the driver's side window. Perhaps it was a gift that was given to him by his former student slash head of school slash dickhead boss, and he was spiting him. Perhaps he's cutting ties with his home, or maybe he aggressively spit it out to signify that his days of drinking and depending on alcohol are over.
Didn't he steal it from the headmaster?
It was stolen?
Yeah, because you remember in the beginning when he goes to talk to the headmaster said that he got a gift from, like, the board or something, and it was that?
Oh.
I think he stole it.
Okay.
It was very much an FU to the school.
Yeah, but I think it was also, like, a big part of, like, him saying, because he's been alcohol dependent, like, the entire film. Yeah. And so I think, like... him taking this giant swig, and it's, you know, like, nobody really wants to waste expensive alcohol, especially if you enjoy drinking.
Yeah.
So to just do that, so then it wasn't a gift, but he did take it from him. So it was definitely that FU, but then also, like, an FU to, like, that former life that he had.
I'm also going to throw in that he got a little notebook to write his, the book that he's always been saying.
From there.
Yeah.
Yes.
All right.
So IMDb gave this an 8, the people on IMDb, it was an 8.0. On Metacritic, the Metascore was an 82, and the user score was an 8.0.
I'm so sorry. I forgot to look up the score on Rotten Tomatoes. I went straight into my highs and lows. That's how excited I was to talk about this movie. I bulldozed right over Rotten Tomatoes. Okay.
Well, while you're looking it up, do you want me to read my review?
Actually, I got it. So on Rotten Tomatoes, the critics gave this a 96%. And if the other side of my screen will load, it'll tell me that the audience gave it a 90-something percent. Okay. I don't know.
So it's high.
It's high. It's high all the way around.
All right. So I have a review that's... I wanted to find one that was... that was like a good review, but I also wanted it to mimic, for some reason this time I just felt the need to do this, to have it mimic the ratings. So it's an 8 out of 10, so it's very close to where my ratings were.
Okay.
Substantial, beautiful, real. Okay. And this review is from December of 2023, so probably right when the movie came out.
Yeah.
Finally, a good movie, and good is in capital letters. The story slash script, although not a breakthrough idea, was heartfelt, full, and real. The settings were also real and gorgeous. Not really a CGI fan. Camera, cinematography, lighting, sound, score, .. Every level made my eyes and ears satisfyingly full. Acting was Oscar-worthy across the board. Directing was brilliant. only negative I came up with is that the pace was a bit slow, but so much of the movie is focused and so superbly and beautifully made, I just sat back and enjoyed it. A very thoughtful and substantial movie, a rare gem in today's superficial, gimmicky movie-making world.
Yeah. Co-sign all of that.
Same.
I have just been scrolling through Rotten Tomatoes, and I don't see a bad review anywhere, so I just grabbed this really quick. It's a 5-star review. Not for everyone, but I liked it. It's a Christmas story too, because this is our Christmas movie for this month.
I know.
You know. I want them to know.
Okay. Hey, them. Now you know.
Hey, friends. Now you know.
Hey, friends.
We're moving out of the movie set in the 60s to the early 70s. Now that it's considered ancient history, okay, it's still...
Take it easy.
It's still hard for people to imagine a time of no cell phones, no computers, and no instant communications. Hell, cable TV wasn't a thing. Yet there were only 3 stations then, and Vietnam was still raging. Against this backdrop is this established 200-year-old East Coast boarding school where old money and trust fund kids go to get prepped for Ivy League schools like Harvard and Yale. You know, the kids of the kids that go to the Hamptons in the summer and Aspen during the Christmas break. And if your dad is the CEO of Pratt & Whitney, he lands in the quad to airlift you by private helicopter. But not everyone... And that includes this kid and 2 people who are faculty and school lay employees, teacher and cook respectively. And they're as abandoned as a student with nowhere to go for the holidays. There are no car chases, no shootouts, no superheroes, no gravity-defying fight scenes. Again, no CGI, no special effects. Just the power of story and the actors. Okay, so very similar to what you were saying.
I'm going to say, okay, so there were very few, like, little teeny tiny lows.
Okay.
But I'm going to tell you how much this movie meant to me right now by telling you what it reminds me of.
Okay.
There were a couple of so I'm moving into expectation versus reality a teeny bit, but I'll explain it. I guess I'll just explain it again when I get to that section.
Okay.
I liked this movie so much because I was afraid that it was going to be this, and it wasn't, but it had the vibe of Dead Poets Society.
I thought Dead Poets Society too.
That movie, I love Robin Williams. Of course. I'm always going to love him.
Of course.
But that is hands down one of my favorite movies. Mm-hmm. It's one of the reasons that I love literature. It's one of the reasons I love writing. Ironically, I'm not a huge fan of poetry.
Yeah.
But like that whole, yeah, I love that movie so much. And Paul Giamatti was absolutely, they all were, but he was absolutely fantastic. And you know what? I thought about this while I was watching this. I love Paul Giamatti as the bad guy. He's so fucking good at it.
Yeah. That's because we've watched, what is it, Liar Liar or Big Fat Liar?
Big Fat Liar.
Big Fat Liar. Liar Liar is Jim Carrey.
Jim Carrey.
Yes. Big Fat Liar as children.
Is blue. Yes, it's Big Fat Liar.
Yes. See, but I don't necessarily see him as the bad guy in this movie. Is he a hard-ass, annoying teacher in the beginning? Yes. But then once you hear his story about how he got, like, fucked over by his Harvard roommate and how he was sent to be here because he's basically in, like, a golden birdcage where he has a well-paying job and he likes what he does. However, he doesn't love what he does, nor can he do what he really wants to do or get, like, an actual college education because of what happened to him all those years ago. So he's just like stuck between a rock and a hard place, and that's why he takes it out on these kids.
Yes. I mean, I understand that he got kicked out of Harvard, but also he could have definitely taken those credits and transferred them, probably not to another Ivy League school.
But that is true, but like it's more about the vendetta. Like he's got a list of names, and there are people in there's I'm doing a really bad job at quoting Taylor Swift right now. Anyway, you know what I'm trying to say here.
Yeah, I do.
He is not, he's unable to take his frustration out on the people who actually wronged him. So instead, he is preventing these kids from getting into the Ivy League schools on, you know, just merit as opposed to, well, not necessarily as merit. He's not handing out favors to these kids so that they can cruise through their Ivy League education the way that his roommate did, as opposed to him who actually worked hard for it.
Well, I don't necessarily know if that's taking it out on the kids. That's being just. That's basically doing what wasn't done to him.
Well, but the difference is that he's a dick about it. That's what he's taking them. He's a dick about it. But it's interesting that you bring up Dead Poets Society. I want to touch on that because the difference between Dead Poets Society and this, especially once I saw how much time we had left in this movie after like the big stuff happened, and I was like, what else could possibly happen? I got very, very worried that we were going to have a sad ending to this movie like we did in Dead Poets Society.
Yeah, yeah.
And there wasn't. And I was so happy about it.
Well, it was definitely, it was sad in a different way.
Sad in a different way, but it wasn't like, for once, I didn't want a big twist to happen in the movie. Because I grew such an emotional attachment to these three that I really didn't want something big to happen to them.
Because I can't think of the best way to phrase this. So I'm just going to just say it off the top of my head. I don't think that could have happened because the bad things already happened. He lost his position at Harvard. The kid's father's in a psychiatric ward. Mary lost her fiance, father of her child, and her son.
Yeah.
Like, bad things already happened to them. So this just became like a way for like three people who have just like isolated and sometimes shitty tendencies to find a way to come together at the time of year where everyone is meant to come together.
Yeah, I see this movie more so as dealing with your grief and finding family in unexpected places. And that was one of my big highs for this movie. I loved, absolutely loved how the three of them assumed the predetermined societal roles. Like, Mary became the mom, Paul became the dad, and Angus became the son. And like, Angus is storming away, like grumpy about something. And then those two were having a conversation like his parents, like his adopted parents.
You see it when they first start watching TV together, where he's in the back and they're sitting together. And then just slowly watching their shitty tendencies to go, because they all have like, so Mary was super impatient. Yeah. And that was like probably one of the first things that slowly started to slip away. Angus was a little shit. He was always getting into trouble, and that slowly started to stop. And then Paul's like lack of empathy, Scrooge-ish tendencies slowly started to go away too as they came together, which was really nice.
Yes, they are definitely like shitty personality qualities, but I believe that a lot of them took on those qualities as they were dealing with grief. Because that is the common denominator between those three people, is that they are all dealing with grief in one way or another.
Once they found a healthier way to deal with grief, those ways that they were dealing with it started to dissolve.
And they were also, I mean, the healthiest way that they were able to deal with it was by finding each other and opening up to one another. Exactly. Which is so lovely. Yeah. The fact that we're having this kind of beautiful conversation about this movie shows how good of a movie it was. But
I will fight anyone. If I could quote what we did last week, this is a movie and I like it. These are my friends and I like them. And I will fight anyone who comes after this.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And I will find you.
You know, well, okay, this is why I'm happy it didn't take a Dead Poets Society turn. There are a lot of sad elements to this movie that each one of them are dealing with in their own ways. It would have been incredibly gratuitous on the part of the writers to throw in a big sad moment for one of the people. It would have been very gratuitous for Paul and Mary to wind up together. And you know what? None of that happened, and that made the movie even more realistic in my eyes. There wasn't this big plot twist to send all the characters into a spin. It was just an even keeled movie all throughout.
Yeah, and with that though, right? You risk like people complaining about the pace, like my review, because there's no like grand thing happening with this buildup is for. So like the pace can seem a little off-putting because of that. I had no problem with it. It was definitely long and felt like it was like a longer movie, but like, yeah. I wasn't necessarily complaining about the.
You want to know why? Because the dialogue was so well written.
This was a very well written movie. I 100% agree with you it was beautiful. Like So the one low that I had when it comes to the lines, right, mm-hmm. was when we're in the psychiatric ward and the father says this very cliche line.
Yeah.
Listen, I think they're putting something in my food. And the amount of times that I've heard a line like that when it comes to that type of, so I go back and forth with this line because it is very cliche. I hear it very often in different movies or things that I've read that people have written about like this type of situation. And that's always like the telltale line. If you're not going to be super direct by saying, hey, this person suffers from mental illness, like a serious one, like schizophrenia.
Yeah.
And they need to be institutionalized in a hospital so we can take care of them. It's always that line. And so to me, it's cliche. But then I was like, Christina, wait a minute. Remember, this takes place in the 70s. Maybe it wasn't a cliche line at that time.
Mm-hmm.
I go back and forth with that line in terms. But that, other than that, everything else, the writing was just spot on.
I didn't have any lows for this movie.
I wish we saw the snow globe transaction.
Okay.
I do wish that.
But I think that it was fine the way that it was because you saw him looking at it at the Christmas party. And then as soon as you heard that, oh, there's a snow globe, you know exactly what it is.
Okay.
I just need to say that the tone of this movie, the cinematography, the whole feel, the whole vibe of this movie, off the charts.
Oh, yeah.
If anyone knows anything about me listening to this podcast for a very long time, I love a movie that's a vibe, and this movie is a vibe. The music in this movie, the 70s folk music in this movie, is chef's kiss.
The graininess of it.
Ugh.
The color is, yeah. Ugh.
It's like the I'm living in a Simon Garfunkel song, and I absolutely love it.
Yeah. I think I said all of those things. When it comes to the way it was shot, the colors, I loved all of it. The only other, I think the only other low that I have was maybe I missed something, but it did take a long time to figure out when exactly this is taking place. And so the two clues that I found were when we're at the party, which is sometime into the movie, when we're at the Christmas Eve party, he compliments her on her silver tree. And she's like, I did it to commemorate the moon landing last year. So now I know that we're like, well, I don't know if she said last year, but mm-hmm. the moon landing was like right at the end of 69, right?
Yeah.
So I know that this is like probably like 1970. And then the New Year's party that they have, like just the three of them or four of them, then it says it's 1971. It did take a while to figure out the exact like when of this.
It didn't for me because you know that if Mary's son passed away fighting in Vietnam.
That's it. I knew there was something that I missed.
Okay. Yeah, that was mentioned very early on in the movie. So if you know that, then you can kind of... And Angus is so afraid to go to military school because it's basically him going to Vietnam as well if it's in the
70s.
Okay. Yeah.
I thought that there was something that I missed. That's why I brought it up. Because it looks like it was so carefully crafted,
mm-hmm.
I knew that I had to be missing something. And I love when that happens, where it's like, what happened here? It's like, no, I must be missing something because this is so well done that maybe like it was me. Maybe I turned my head at the wrong time or something like that.
That's such a good way to explain this movie. It is so carefully crafted. And I know that your gripe with a lot of A24 films are that they are also very carefully crafted. But the difference between this and other films that we've watched is that this movie is actually just like very, very funny. And just...
Oh, yeah.
And the acting on all parts, everything just... It all feels so realistic, but so just like beautiful and stunning and lovely and heartfelt. And I loved it.
When a movie can make me laugh and cry at the same time.
Oh, yes. I will throw in this other point that I realized like afterwards. I absolutely love Paul Giamatti in this movie, but rethinking about all the moments of his character, I loved that he constantly uses his intelligence as a shield to protect like his inner feelings, and especially like the grief of not being able to have that like Harvard education and be able to really go after his dreams. So that just enhances his, or that just intensifies his need to be even more intelligent. Like the scene when he's talking to the makeshift Santa and the bartender, and he just drops like random knowledge about Santa Claus and like what his outfit should actually look like, and those two guys have like no time for him, and he's just sitting there smiling like
they just look so confused. Oh, see, I thought that that was him actually trying to make friends, and he didn't know how to make small talk, so he just started talking about things academically.
I mean, I guess partially, yes, but
he tried to use the thing that he uses as a shield to kind of help him, and it just backfired.
Yeah, it did. It did. That's it. I agree that he did that. But
did you have any other highs that we missed?
I mean, we touched on a lot of them, but yeah. I'm so happy that Paul Giamatti and Divine Joy Randolph won. And I haven't seen Poor Things, but to echo your sentiment earlier, it better be really, really good because this was really, really good.
Really better be good. Oh, I have one more. I love how, like, realistically naive these children are in this movie.
Oh.
Because at the end, even though his tone really hasn't changed too much, we realize that Paul has become a different person and a different teacher because he does give them a second chance to take the final. Yeah. And he doesn't mention that there's any more or additional information on it. He just kind of like, what did I write here? At the end... Paul gives the kids a second chance to take the final exam, and it's not going to be with new information. It's like we see how he's changed, because before the break, he would have never have done that, but now he did it, but the kids don't even realize it because he kind of was low-key about it because mm-hmm. he threw a pop quiz in there, and the kids are like, oh, pop quiz, blah. But they get a chance to, like, revive their entire grade, and he didn't mention that the grades would be averaged, right? So it's like... all these good things were happening, but the kids are so stuck up on this little pop quiz. They're like, oh, this sucks. Blah. You know, like that naive piece of it.
Of course, you're paying attention to the teacher aspect of it.
The whole thing is a teacher aspect.
You're thinking about the kids' grades in this movie.
No, I'm not thinking about the kids' grades. But what I am thinking about is when a teacher has a change of heart, it is rare.
True.
And a lot of times, it's not always recognized by students.
Mm. True.
Unless it's like you accidentally mark something wrong on an exam, right? And it's supposed to be right. And then the teacher would be like, okay, my bad. Everybody gets points for it because I fucked up. Gotcha. Other than that, it's very rare. So, yeah. I like it.
Should we segue into snack break?
Yeah, what did you eat?
It's soup season, baby.
Season.
I'm still over here. I'm still making my soups. So,
I'm making my soups.
My Le Creuset has been getting in the work. So I made a soup, chicken thighs, onion, sweet potato, couscous, and dill.
Ooh, and it was delish. Did you use like a chicken broth? What did you use for the?
Yeah, I had some bone broth. A little Trader Joe's bone broth. I love putting sweet potatoes in a soup. I cannot be stopped. I think I put sweet potatoes in a soup more than I put actual potatoes in a soup.
And how long do you stew your soup on the stove?
It depends. The goal is to cook the chicken the rest of the way, because I don't cook it all the way. I brown the chicken before I, you know, put all, everything in the pot. That's but safe. I usually do like a 15 minute, do like 15 to 20 minutes of soup on the stove. That'll usually cook the chicken all the way through. And then
your veggies and your potatoes and everything.
What happened?
And your veggies and potatoes and everything?
Yeah, it cooks all of that. And then if I think in this I did spinach. Spinach you don't need to, like, actually cook down. You can just throw it in there, it wilts. But if you're doing kale, I'll usually go another, like, five to cook down the kale.
Interesting. Yeah. Sounds good. Sounds really good.
You got to start thinking about soups as, like, warm salads that you can make in big batches.
I'm ready to make, I haven't made it in a while, but I make this, and it's Whole30 approved. It is a garlic potato cream soup, but there's no cream in it, obviously. Yeah. And it is divine.
Mm.
It has a billion cloves of garlic in it.
Hell yeah.
But the key is that you roast the garlic before you put it in, so it has like almost that sweet texture.
Do you do like the garlic confit? Basically. Where you put it in like the olive oil and like cook it in the oven?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Oh, it's so good.
But I didn't do that because I was watching it this afternoon. Instead, I had my lunch, which was like an egg bowl. But then my Amazon delivery came in the middle of this, and I ordered a box of RX vanilla almond butter.
Oh, those are good.
Yep. I had to sit on it because it was freezing cold. So I had to sit on it to warm it up so I can move it around. Otherwise, you just get a mouthful of oil, and you're like, what the fuck am I supposed to do with this? Right. So I moved it around, and then like a child, I just kind of ate it right through the
Of course.
It's amazing. I love it. Everybody go buy. RX does not sponsor this. They should.
They should.
With the amount of money that we've spent on RX products. But it's fantastic. I highly recommend it. So good. It's better than the bar. Don't buy the vanilla almond bar. Just go right to the almond
bar. Oh, I thought you were talking about the vanilla almond bar. I actually like the vanilla almond bar.
I do, but this is better. I'm telling you, it's better. It's like little packets of like a serving size of almond butter. Mm. And you just like, Go-Gurt the packet. It's the best 90s way I could phrase that.
Gotcha.
It's fantastic.
It comes like a little goo packet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty much, yeah.
Gotcha. Okay.
Sometimes I'll like put it on my banana and I'll take a bite of the banana and I'll put more on a banana. That's not up your alley. So just have the packet. Or sometimes I'll put it on an apple and I'll take a bite of the apple.
Okay. That's more my speed.
Very good. Yes. Very good. It's also good by itself.
Yeah.
And it's not dangerous because, like, so Danielle and I have had this habit when we used to watch TV together where we'd put a giant jar of peanut butter or Nutella in between us and we would just have spoons. And we all see where this is going. So when I say it's not dangerous, I mean, like, you're not going to have a whole Costco-sized jar of Nutella. You're going to have, like, the two tablespoons that you're supposed to have at a time. You can have more, but at a time.
When I die,
bury you in satin, lay you down on a bed of roses.
Yes, thank you. Thank you. Good one. When I die, I'm going to ask God to show me how much peanut butter I've eaten in my life.
I believe, I have no proof of this, but I believe that when you die, you become all knowing. So you're going to instantly
know. I'm just going to know. I just want to see, like, how. Like, I want to see it in once. I want to see one giant jar of peanut butter the size of how much peanut butter I've eaten in my life.
It's going to be a continent.
It would be. It would take up this entire living room that I'm in right now. Not saying the living room is big, but it would be this big. It would be It would be like the ghost of Christmas present when he shows up to Scrooge and he's like bent over. It would be crunched in here.
I was thinking Christmas yet to come, and he just points to the peanut butter.
That's God, and God saying, look at the peanut butter.
And he points to your grave, and your grave has, like, peanut butter. It has, like, the Skippy's logo on it.
Oh, my gosh. That has to be a really big grave. Because I've eaten a lot of peanut butter in my, a lot of peanut butter.
So, I know. So and now you're back on it, right?
Yeah. I had to take a break. There was a point where my body was like, no more peanut butter, please.
No, no more, please.
I've cooled it down, and people think like, oh, you're talking about peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, Reese's peanut butter cups. No. I'm just talking straight from the jar peanut butter.
I feel like I did a very good job of explaining this by saying we had the jar and spoons. Because I remember when I went to college, and we, at this point, we had done like Nutella in high school. And then in college, I think we switched over to peanut butter until you couldn't have it anymore.
I think I owe my roommate Jackie so much peanut butter because all I would do would be to eat her peanut butter. I would take Cheerios in a cup and just cover it in peanut butter and eat it like that.
I used to take dark chocolate chips and just like throw them on the spoon with the peanut butter.
So good.
But so I went to when I went to college and somebody bought Nutella and I was like, this is dangerous. And they were like, oh, it's so good. It's so good on this. Everybody went around like, oh, it's so good on this. It's so good on Wonder Bread. It's so good on potato bread. It's so good on strawberries. And I was like, it's so good on a spoon.
Yeah, absolutely.
And they were like, what? And I was like, let's not play this game. Let's not play the game where you pretend you don't know what I'm talking about. Just eat it on a spoon and shut up.
Eat it straight from the jar.
Bread, this transitional bread, we don't need this.
Nah.
Just get a spoon. The spoon is zero calories. So as far as I'm concerned,
yes.
I'm doing it better.
So I can eat the whole jar of Nutella. Sounds great. All right. Let's segue into expectation versus reality.
Okay, fine. So I said earlier, my expectation was that this was going to be like, well, first, all I knew was that Paul Giamatti was in it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I looked it up a little bit and I had a feeling that it was going to have hints of Dead Poets Society, that it was mimicking it. I was wrong and I'm so happy about that because Dead Poets Society is a very distinct movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like if it went down that route, there's like no mistaking it and no getting out of it.
Mm-hmm.
But it just had a similar setting. But it was a vastly different movie and it was beautiful.
Yeah.
And that's it.
So I knew the name. I knew Paul Giamatti was in it. And I saw the movie poster.
Okay.
And I was thinking it was going to be more of like a true comedy. And by unfortunately like true comedy these days, I'm thinking like, I don't know, like, what's that Christmas movie where the kids get stuck in the mall? Like, I was thinking it was going to be like a Good Boys, like something Adam Sandler was starring.
Like Grown Ups?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. I've never seen that movie, but like, you know what I'm saying. Like one of those types of comedy movies. I just watched Four Christmases, like something like that.
Okay.
Which is
like Dodgeball?
Yeah, we'll put that all in that category. Like something like that kind of comedy. Like okay, much more much slapsticky, like so not close to reality, just like very pandering. And listen, sometimes pandering is good. Oftentimes these days it hasn't been that good, but I thought it was going to be close to that. That's why I was so surprised that it was nominated for a Golden Globe, but completely opposite to that, and I'm so happy it was. I'm so happy with how all of this turned out. I also think it's because I remember Paul Giamatti being in Big Fat Liar, and that was the kind of comedy that I was expecting.
Okay, I see.
Yeah.
Man has range.
The man does have range. All right, do you have a IRL moment?
I mean, I feel like I'm going to incriminate myself if I do. Let's just say this. I am a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
I am now a professor. And I understand.
Okay.
I'll just say that.
Okay.
I understand.
Okay.
That's all I'm going to say.
Okay. We won't touch that. Mine's very...
It's not so much... It's like... When he would be sarcastic, he would say things. I'm like, oh, I can't... But I want to be like... That's like... you suck, but like, I empathize. I get it. I'm sorry.
No.
I don't do it, but I get it.
You need to apologize.
If any of my students are listening, I'm sorry. I don't know what I'm sorry for. I don't do it, but I'm saying I understand. I can empathize with that, a lot of that.
Don't make me put you on an I'm sorry timeout again.
All right. I'm just going to say, when the man is frustrated, I get it. When the man is sarcastic, I get it.
Okay.
That's it.
Mine is, I also make Christmas cookies and like to share them the same way Paul Giamatti does. Just like, put them out and just kind of, ha ha, these are my Christmas cookies. Please have some. Even though he wasn't the one to make them, but I,
he wasn't the one to make them, but he did put them out. It was the one time that he started to show happiness. So I get that you would relate. Makes sense.
Yeah. All right. I think that's everything.
He did it. What's next? Oppenheimer or Barbie?
I think Barbie. Barbie's next.
It is?
Yeah.
Okay. So we decided to do them back to back because like everybody was talking about them back to back. So it just made the most sense.
They came out the same weekend.
They did. And so that's why we're doing it that way. So that's next week. We're going to talk about that. And then we're going to talk about Oppenheimer. And then we're going to move into February. And we have one more holiday movie for you. So if you would like to write in a review about Barbie or Oppenheimer that you'd like us to read on the pod, you can DM us on Instagram or Twitter at Hey It's Two Girls. I'm on Instagram and Twitter at Classic Cena. Danielle's on Instagram at Danielle Kobianki. We also accept reviews about the podcast or about some of the movies. TwoGirlsWatchTV@gmail.com if you want to write one in, and we'll read it on the podcast. And also the YouTube channel is Two Girls Drink Beer.
All right, everyone. Enjoy the rest of your weekends and we'll catch you next week. Bye.